From historic Seminary Ridge in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, this is The Seminary Explores. Conversations about people, politics, theology, and life with your host, Dr. Gerald Christensen.
Walking into history with a stroke or two of the brush. Hello, I'm Jerry Christensen, and this is The Seminary Explores. Our guest today is Dale Gallen, the well-known, distinguished artist in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, and we're broadcasting from his studio today, so we are actually surrounded by many of his 200 paintings. We want to talk particularly about one of the biggest commissions in his career, the commission of 10 original paintings for the Seminary Ridge Museum on Seminary Ridge in Gettysburg. Originally, Dale is a native of Southern California and studied at the prestigious Arts Center College of Design in Los Angeles. But then by 1980, he had released his first limited edition Civil War print, and in a sense, the rest is history. However, he moved his family to the East Coast in 1984, and now the battlefield is his studio. I mentioned he has done over 200 images. They hang in such places as the U.S. Army War College in Carlisle, the Pentagon, Fort Leonard Wood. In fact, there are several of them at the War College, a number of them. VMI, the Minnesota State Capitol, and many other places. Dale, welcome. And let me ask, what do you remember, if anything, about this major commission for doing 10 paintings for the Seminary Ridge Museum? It's so long ago, maybe it's all now in the mists of time.
Well, I kind of remember talking to Bradley Hoke and Wayne Motz, and they discussed that the museum was going to have a lot of murals, and when we talked about, well, I didn't see any, you know, it was such a big project, 10 murals would probably take somebody 20 years.
And they gave you less than six or something.
We ended up doing it in 3 years.
In three?
But when I say murals, you know, you think of Michelangelo these guys painting on a wall. This isn't exactly what happened here. What we did is we did smaller paintings that were mechanically enlarged to be murals.
Yeah.
Which is a whole different story than
another art form, murals. Or almost an art form, a technological skill. It was Creekside Digital of Virginia. You may contradict me, I think they did a remarkable job.
I think so too, and I was fairly concerned at the beginning because I'd never had any of my stuff blown up to the kind of size they were talking to, and I was afraid that it would fall apart at a larger size, particularly if you couldn't get away from it to view it.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like a billboard, and you stand next to a billboard 5 feet, you can't see anything, but you get 200 yards away and it all makes sense. So,
I was a little concerned.
I think that they came out and that they were just excellent.
Oh, good.
Came out.
And I think there's got a couple of clues to why that happened, why it worked out so well, not just because of your skill. Well, certainly your skill, but not just of Creekside skill in scanning and enlarging them, but the kind of care you've taken with the way we enter into history. But let's get on with that in a little while. Right now, in fact, you've got an original sitting right here in front of us. It's Daniel Alexander Payne, the first African-American student to study at Lutheran Theological Seminary, meeting we would call him president today, the chief faculty member, Samuel Simon Schmucker. What other stories? They're all about the first day's battle, are they not, those 10 paintings?
Right. Most of the subjects I was fairly familiar with. The one called Fighting on the Ridges kind of threw me a curve when I got into the history. I went to the actual site on the national park, and there's a road over there and a stone wall, and the history told us that the Federals came up behind the stone wall and shot into Iverson's brigade and basically annihilated them. And I went over and looked at the site, and I said that I couldn't understand how the Federals could be behind the wall and not be seen. Because that's the way they described it. They marched up the hill, their heads just popped over the stone wall, and they were unseen by Iverson's brigade. Mm-hmm. Well, I came to find out that they'd moved the road and the stone wall since the battle. And so then I had to I worked with the folks, Ben Neely and some of those guys over at the Historical Society, and we figured out that the wall had been moved probably 40 yards further up the hill from the time the battle was fought. But generally, I was pretty familiar with all the different subjects of all the paintings. Mm-hmm. I had a lot of great help from the Balkis, is that their name?
Mm-hmm. Balki.
Balki. On costumes.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the pictures I was a little unfamiliar with civilian costumes.
Mm-hmm.
And so they helped tremendously in that department.
You've anticipated one of my questions for later on, so I'll address it right now. I was fortunate enough to be in on that correspondence. You never heard from me because that is not my field. But right down to the most minute detail, especially the one that sits here in front of us, of Schmucker meeting Daniel Alexander Payne,
yeah.
That one went through about six cycles of emails where costumes had to be changed by just the minutest detail, the size of the hat, and then even the posture of the two persons, whether or not there's a bow involved or a handshake. You learn a lot about 19th century customs.
Yeah, and now that picture takes place in the 1830s.
Oh, that's right.
It's not the 1860s, and civilian costumes have changed a lot
mm-hmm.
between the 30s and the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And I was not familiar with some of the nuances in the in that department, mm-hmm. but it was great fun.
And the Balakis, of course, are experts in that, and did help out. Yes, I'm glad you thought it was great fun. It could have been very irritating, but you handled it with great ease and great generosity. Among my favorites, and everybody has different favorites, I know the one that I think will get the greatest press will be the end of July 1st, the end of the first day's battle, where we see the wounded all over the grounds around what we have called Old Dorm, which was then known as the seminary. I think that will be one of the most popular ones. One of those ones that I have enjoyed a great deal, however, is one you call Buford's Boys, because of the perspective. And a little later on, we can talk about that. Still, again, another one is the one you just mentioned, because there you get a sense of the fighting on the ridges. You get a sense of the First Corps lined up, vulnerable. You know, at that moment of greatest vulnerability, they happen to get the advantage as a start, but later on that was not the case. Stretched out in a way that a photograph, if they did have a photograph in those days, and they didn't, could never have caught. So those are my favorites among the ten.
Well, that's one of the things about what I do, is that I try to give it a perspective of you being there. I don't try to romanticize it. I try to show it probably the way it looked at the time, and try to get to the historic details as best we can. I always like to say, history is a moving target. You can think something this week and then find out, because somebody wrote it down in a diary, next week, that what you thought last week was wrong. But that was pretty satisfying, that one of the seminary building with all the wounded in front. Of course, I went from the photographs at the time. And I thought there was one thing that was pretty interesting about that was that they'd hung a red petticoat,
yes.
supposedly from the cupola.
Yes.
And I didn't know that. Ben Neely told me about it. And he says, it's in the photograph. Well, I've looked at every photograph of that building in existence, and I never saw a petticoat. And so I went back with my magnifying glass. And, sure enough, in one of the photographs, there's a dot.
Mm-hmm.
From, of course, it's taken from a quarter of a mile away, up in that cupola. And I was, I looked at it first, and it's just a flaw in the photograph.
Mm-hmm.
But sure enough, if you look at it close enough with the magnifying glass, it looks like something was there.
We better explain to people what a red petticoat is doing in the cupola of a Lutheran seminary building.
Yeah.
What is it to symbolize?
It was showing the Federals over on Cemetery Hill. They had all that artillery over there, that the building was being used as a hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it was there on the evening of the 1st, I doubt it. I'm sure that because of the shelling on the 2nd, mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure that somebody got up there and hung it up there to tell them to stop, because the building was being hit.
I think we do have, or do we not have, some written evidence of that. It was the petticoat of Mrs. Ziegler, Marie Ziegler, who was the matron of the seminary. Her husband was the steward, the groundskeeper, and all the rest. The kids lived in the building. We got stories from them, marvelous stories from them. And they must have ransacked her closet and found something red.
Yeah, something they could see.
That could be seen somewhere else.
Yeah.
We're talking to Dale Gallen. I'm Jerry Christensen, and this is the Seminary Explorers. And Mr. Gallen is a distinguished art historian, or art historian the other way around, is the artist of historical subjects, who has had hangings in many different places around the nation, and most recently a major commission from the Seminary Ridge Museum of 10 paintings related to the first day's battle, to the hospital, and to other events of importance related to the seminary, including the meeting of the founder, Samuel Simon Schmucker, with the first black African-American to study at the seminary, who became especially important to African-American history in the United States, Daniel Alexander Payne. I've been anxious to ask you, now that we've got these preliminaries out of the way, Dale, about your feeling that your painting is a history lesson, and that's almost summarizes everything you've been saying so far. History as a moving target, trying to capture history as it really was, and yet as an art. How have you been able to accomplish this? First of all, I can hear you saying historical accuracy.
The thing that I think appeals to people that see my paintings is that history thing. Mm-hmm. We try to get those details right. And some people would say that I'm a historian. I'm not a historian. I'm a painter, an illustrator, an artist. And I learned very early in this that there's a lot of people out there that are historians, and they're very helpful. If I had to run down all the details that I get into in a painting, I wouldn't get the painting.
Right.
I mean, it's a double, there's two things going on here. And I have been very fortunate with the people that have been my historians, that have worked for us, very, very knowledgeable, excellent people. And the nice thing about it is that if I get stumped, I know I can call them, and if they don't know, they know who to call.
Mm-hmm.
And it works out very well.
And you, as I noticed in this commission for the seminary, I mentioned the word gracious before. I would have been a lot more impatient with the whole thing, but you're willing to accept any correction that has to do with historical detail. You're not
That comes from my commercial background.
Mm-hmm.
I worked as a commercial illustrator before I got into this historical stuff in California.
You had a scholarship from Hallmark Cards.
Hallmark Cards in high school, yeah.
Oh,
I won second in the United States in a watercolor painting.
Oh, is that right? And was the start of this being aware of the customer's needs?
No, not necessarily, because it wasn't a commission. It was an art contest. They were just grading paintings. Nobody specified anything. I got into the... my first job out of college was... I work for McDonnell Douglas. Airplanes,
yeah,
and details are important.
Oh, boy.
And
By the 1980s, you had done your first Civil War painting. Had you been a Civil War buff before then?
My father had these Civil War books that were printed during the war.
Yeah.
And they had steel engravings, and I'm sure you've seen the old books that have the tissue and steel engraving.
Yeah.
Well, these books were full of those, battle scenes of the Civil War. And they were, the books themselves I tried to read, but you can't read them. They were basically Northern propaganda.
Yes, yes, yes. The War of the Rebellion.
The War of the Rebellion. That was the title of it.
Exactly. I know, exactly.
You probably know the books.
Yeah.
Anyway, I looked at those as a kid, and my father would cherish these books. And he would bring them out like once a year, and I would get to look at them. And somehow I think that sparked.
Mm-hmm.
Because my original love of painting and everything was sailing ships,
mm-hmm.
a marine thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I always had this thing about the Civil War in my head somewhere,
mm-hmm.
floating
mm-hmm.
around.
And it culminated in moving everybody out here.
Well, it did.
Of E.T., or not E.T., where was it, where the guy finally moves to the very place and starts building a mound because of another dimension that's calling him.
In this particular case, a friend of mine who was really into Civil War artifacts, and I wasn't so much, but his wife commissioned me to do a painting for him for a Christmas present. And that was the first first one. And one thing led to another, and we ended up moving back here. Thought this would be a much better place to raise our kids than where we were.
Not a bad idea either.
And
then, as I said, then the battlefield becomes your studio.
Right.
You don't.
And Gettysburg is a fabulous place to live.
Yeah.
As far as as far as just culture.
Yeah.
So it all fit together.
Outside of historical accuracy, which is so important to you, I want to suggest three or four others that I see, and you can comment on them. The biggest one, but we'll leave that for later on, is this sense of walking into history and how you do that. But what about the characteristics I see in your paintings? Are color certainly a consciousness about the effect of color? Then depth is very important. These are two-dimensional paintings, but somehow depth and perspective has become essential, very essential. And characterizations of the individuals, and that's enough to talk about for the next four or five programs. And then finally, action. You got them all in there, somewhere or another, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, the nice thing about these military history paintings is that action kind of comes along with the territory. The atmospheric, we'll call it atmospheric perspective versus linear perspective.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can make linear perspective, you know, things in the foreground big, and as they go back, they get smaller and smaller.
Mm-hmm.
But you also have atmospheric perspective. If you notice, things up close to you are more contrasty. There's more contrast, dark light. Colors are more vivid. As things go into the distance, they get grayer and softer in the contrast. So that's, in a way, you're creating a three-dimensional illusion on a two-dimensional space.
Okay.
And that's something I've always been fairly good at.
I do think it works. It works very, very well. And I've called it perspective, but it's probably got a better name than that. But it draws us in. And it's a Renaissance invention that we're drawn into a painting.
That's right.
And
but there's also the aspect of the two-dimensional graphics.
Mm-hmm.
It's like two-dimensional design of the painting. You take an artist like, say Renoir, Degas, any of those people, they were very heavily influenced by Japanese art.
True.
Which is flat.
Correct.
And I try to design my paintings with some of that in mind, some of that flat, abstract composition.
Also blocks of color then. And of course when you've got blue and gray, soldiers on the, that works out very well, blocks of
Right. You know, very complex areas versus very simple.
Okay.
Well, like this one.
Yeah.
You see how simple the sky is.
Yeah.
And how complex the foreground is.
Oh, yes. Okay. It makes a nice contrast. We're talking about the one in front of the seminary on the end of the day with all of the wounded
scattered about. One of the real problems graphically with that painting was I had to deal with those trees.
Oh.
These big, dark shapes.
Yeah.
And what I did is I put one on each side and then opened up the center so you could see the building.
Yeah.
But I couldn't get away from, I couldn't leave the trees out.
No.
And they had to be there and they had to be very prominent dark things. So I treated them very flatly.
In that two-dimensional aspect that you've been talking about. You're covering aspects of the paintings that I, as an amateur, have already noticed. The trees then help to frame that picture, and then draw our attention not only to the wounded in front of the building, but to the building itself.
Right.
We walk right in, and when it's a mural like it is at the seminary now in the museum,
you keep on going. You see the flatness of the trees contrasts with the busyness of all the people in the foreground.
Okay. Another one where this is prominent is the one you call Buford's Boys. By the way, that's a perspective you wouldn't get in a photograph because if you were standing in the spot where your painting is, you would be gone in 30 seconds because these guys are firing directly at us with their cannon and their rifles. But you've separated the group subtly in such a way in front of the McPherson barn that there in the distance is
The
seminary building.
See, that was the one little piece of the puzzle I had to solve first.
Uh-huh.
Is get the seminary in there, you know, because why else was I doing the picture?
Yeah.
And so that worked out pretty well. I'm a little uncomfortable with the vertical line. You see the young man there that's shooting right at us.
Yeah.
If you go straight up, then you go right at the side of the barn.
Yeah.
And it's almost a vertical line.
Mm-hmm.
And that always kept that little verticalness there seems always catches my eye. That I should have moved him a little, either the barn a little bit to the right, or him a little bit to the left.
Ah.
Because that vertical line is so powerful.
It is.
And the more every time I look at that, I think I have to move that. It's too late now.
And that was the strength of that picture.
Yeah.
Because for me, when you look at it, you not only see the action right in your face, but beyond that, you see the seminary, and it captures both of them very, very well. We've covered the main thing I wanted to discuss with you, and it is a sense of walking into history. But at the same time, there are some details that I think would be fun to ask you about. Do customers, including those who made the commission at the seminary museum, do they have certain limitations? People are dead and wounded in the pictures, but are there limitations on gruesomeness? And
yeah, I had to hold back a little bit. There was one picture showing the soldiers being taken care of in the seminary, and that could have been a lot more graphic and gruesome, I suppose, if I had been there with a Nikon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It would be pretty rough.
Yeah.
And I knew that, you know, you're getting families and so forth walking through your museum, and you don't want to go too far.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it was a very terrible, horrible situation in there.
Yeah. It was hard to get that balance. I remember the correspondence about that, too.
Yeah.
Sometimes some would push say a little bit, let's get a little more in there. Let's get a little more, they would call it reality. And then others would say, you know, the human mind can take only so much, and then it becomes sensational.
Right. And
you're not trying to avoid it, but you want to miss the point.
Well, one of the little things that happened in that picture, which I thought was pretty interesting, my viewpoint, I had the woman further back reading a prayer book.
Mm-hmm.
And they changed that, and now she's pouring a cup of water. She's taking care. My original concept of the picture was that there were people that were dying.
Yeah.
Now, she wasn't a priest or anything.
No.
But I don't know. I thought that was important. But
indeed it was. And, in fact, I had to get into the seminary museum somewhere because the ideas of faith and freedom are very prominent. And the fact that 19th century people did care for the art of dying.
And everybody carried a prayer book.
Yeah.
I mean, you have them in museums with bullet holes.
Yeah, exactly. And the soldiers were often asking for that in their last wishes. On the other hand, the other side wanted to stress the immediacy of the need for care.
For help.
You know, right now, give me a cup of water. Later on, pray for me. let's get things in order.
Absolutely.
In the last minute or so, Dale, let me ask you about the fact that you did blaze a trail in the 1980s when you were one of the first to attempt an art form depicting the Civil War.
Well, it's pretty true. I think that there wasn't anything being done contemporarily. And we had enough history by now, known history. Most of the artwork for the Civil War was all woodcuts from the national publications.
Mm-hmm.
So there was really nothing new depicting the history that we'd learned over the last 160 years, 150 years,
mm-hmm.
And we were able to, you know, really get a hold of that.
And you've set a high standard, I must say, for this kind of artwork.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
And we try to make the distinction between artists, illustrators, technicians, and you've had to do all of that in order to bring this together, including be either a historian yourself or to get help from historians around you so that things
They've been very helpful, believe me.
It's a group effort, but it comes down to the ability of putting that brush onto the canvas and making it move. Dale Gallen is our guest today. He is the head honcho at the Dale Gallen Studios, and he has just finished completed a commission for the Seminary Ridge Museum of 10 paintings where you can actually walk into history. For the Seminary Explorers, I'm Jerry Christensen. Have a very good day.
You've been listening to The Seminary Explores from historic Seminary Ridge in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, a production of the Lutheran Theological Seminary at Gettysburg. We invite you to visit our website at www.ltsg.edu. All opinions expressed on this program are those of the individual speakers and are not necessarily those of Gettysburg Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.